It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Indeed, it is hump day, and welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there and you'll get a look at all of the upcoming guests as well as our most recent podcasts and our most recent op-eds. We'd appreciate it if you would go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. It is hump day, producer Steve.
Yes, ma'am, it is. And I guess, well, it's obviously a good thing.
But more than that, it's Veterans Day. And all week this week in the third and fourth segments, we've been highlighting a veteran. And my friends, we need to thank each and every veteran for our freedom. We take it for granted what we get to do to live in freedom every day here in this country. So thank a veteran today. And during the third and fourth segment, we will be talking with World War II veteran Kim Kimble. He joined the Navy just a few months after his 17th birthday. You will not want to miss this. He served on the USS Hornet aircraft carrier in the Pacific. That's going to be in the third and fourth segment. Second segment, we'll be talking with Kenneth Timmerman. And he is the author of The Election Heist. He's a New York Times bestselling author, and he predicted the scheme to steal the election. He says this election is far from over, and Emmanuel Recounts will expose the scheme. That's going to be in the second segment. And we'll be talking with Jen Hewlin, Waters Edge Winery, here in the first segment as well. But as you know, my friends, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. If something is a good idea, we should not have to force people to do something. Our quote for today is from Admiral Nimitz. He was the Fleet Admiral of the United States Navy during World War II. He was the Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet and the Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Ocean Areas. He was born in 1885. He died in 1966. And he said, by their victory, the 3rd, 4th, and 5th Marine Divisions and other units of the 5th Amphibious Corps have made an accounting to their country which only history will be able to value fully. Among the Americans who served at Iwo Island, uncommon valor was a common virtue. And that's Chester W. Nimitz. That is pretty amazing. Before we get into the show here, one thing I wanted to let you know is yesterday we reported on the House Minority Leadership. And we needed to clarify something. Hugh McKean was elected as the minority leader on a second ballot vote over Assistant Minority Leader Kevin Van Winkle, who is the current Minority Leader. And then Tim Geithner, Republican from Falcon, was elected the assistant on that. And in addition, Rod Pelton, Cheyenne Wells, will be the next Minority Whip. Janice Rich from Grand Junction will replace Lori Sane as the party's caucus chair, and Kim Ransom, who is my legislator, was appointed to the Joint Budget Committee, and she's done a great job on that. But I have amazing sponsors that I get to work with. And on the line with me is Jen Hewlin. You know her. She is the owner of Waters Edge Winery, which is located in Centennial. It is just west of University, just on the north side of Arapahoe, and one of my favorite places to go, as well as you are a valued partner of the Kim Munson Show. Jen Hewlin, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Good morning. It's very exciting to be on with you again. I miss you all so much.
Well, we miss you, too. You are a true patriot. First thing, Jen, you and I, in preparation for the call, you mentioned that you have some information regarding local ordinances. Somebody's done some research. What is that exactly?
Yeah, well, so we had a little get-together with some other business owners and a friend of mine on Sunday, and she brought in this amazing sheet, and I'm going to be really, really brief about it, but it's 4 points, and first one is that it is illegal for you or another employee to require someone to wear a mask. And it discusses this, even if you are a medical doctor and you have examined the person and figured out that they can restrict their breathing, the person still has the right to choose whether or not to wear a mask. Even recommending that someone wear a mask is an unlicensed practice of medicine. And that is Colorado Revised Statute Title 12, Article 20, Section 407, Paragraph 1, Subparagraph A, Item V, Line M, and it carries a penalty of up to 6 months imprisonment.
Wow.
And this is this awesome sheet right here she's provided to me where it says initial here. So what she's recommending is that if you walk into a business and they tell you you can't be in here because of this mask, you show them this and say, well, I'd like you to initial here because I want to make sure that you understand that you're breaking the law by telling me I must wear one. Of course, they have property rights and they can tell you, but if the only reason they're telling you to wear a mask or to leave is because they think they have to because of government, they're not correct. It is also illegal for you or another employee to take someone's temperature. Gathering vital statistics is a violation of the Fourth Amendment, which protects a person's right to privacy. Violation of this protection will result in your actions being reported to the U.S. Department of Justice. That's required by law to investigate civil rights violations. And again, it says initial here. Number three, it is illegal for you or for another employee to attempt to enforce local ordinances. And this is the one I find most interesting.
Okay.
When the health department folks and liquor enforcement folks came in to visit me because of my stance on not being able to wear masks and not forcing other people to wear them, they told me that I must enforce local ordinances, and this is an ordinance, it's not a law, this whole masking thing and shutting down early and limiting our patronage. This specifically says you are not law enforcement officer, and impersonating a law enforcement officer is a crime in this state under Colorado Revised Statute 18-8-112, which carries a penalty of up to 18 months imprisonment. You will be reported to authorities if you violate this law. Initial here. And then the final one, it's illegal for you or another employee to prohibit someone to enter this establishment, which is a place of public accommodation. And again, it talks about notice of discrimination. You cannot discriminate against somebody that can't wear a face mask. Even if the governor told you you could, he is not a lawmaker. He's not a litigator. He's a governor. And he does have power as the governor. But I would argue that him telling you it's okay to do something when he's actually directing you to break a law, it's Colorado Revised Statute, goes against the Constitution and against the law itself. So this is something that I plan on having at the winery. So if somebody comes in and has a problem with our stance of telling people to live free, then I'm going to show them this, and I'm going to have them initial here, so that way when I have to sue them, I have initials saying they knowingly broke the law. So anyway, I thought this was really interesting, right? It's a powerful tool for us to have as business owners to understand our rights and to know what our capabilities are as American citizens. So.
Wow, freedom sounds so good. Hey, Jen, we have just a little bit of time. We're coming into the holidays, and you truly are a patriot. You've been doing creative labels on different wine bottles. You can do what people want for those labels. Recommend that people come in and do some of their Christmas shopping with you.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So one of my favorite things to do is to shop some of the local shops around the area. My shop is in Littleton, or my winery. We also are right just east of downtown or Old Town Littleton. Really easy to get to, but you can come in and do a personalized label. You can put your loved one's picture on the label. You can put your favorite dog on the label. You could come in and buy a batch of wine. We also have a wine club, which is an awesome way to say I love you, and it gives month after month. You can grab a single bottle. You can grab a case. Great stocking stuffers as well. Plus, if you're just fatigued from all of the news and all of the drama going on in the world and you just need a small minute away, Chef D is making some new amazing specials at the winery, and the wine is still flowing. The vintner's still making wine for us. So come on in and enjoy yourself and say hi, because I'm usually there.
Most definitely. And you can get more information about Water's Edge Winery by going to my website, kimmunson.com, and just click on our different advertising sponsors, and that'll take you directly to Jen's page. Or what's the other way they can reach you, Jen?
Well, we are currently on Facebook and Instagram, and it's Water's Edge Winery Denver Bistro, Water's Edge Winery and Bistro Denver, or wewdenver.com is our website, and you can order wine, you can have it shipped out of state, all kinds of fun things. You can see what's on the menu. Keep in mind the specials menu that changes every month. You have to come in or at least call in to find out what's on that.
Okay. And Jen Hewlin, thank you so much. You are a valued partner of the Kim Munson Show.
Thank you, Kim. Thanks, Steve. Have a great day.
Okay. And before we go to break, I want to give a shout out to another one of my great partners, and that is Hooters Restaurants. And Wednesdays are Wings Day, all the wings that you can eat for $15.99. They have all kinds of specials throughout the day, whether or not it's for football specials or to-go specials. They have a party pack to go, which is great if you're going to have friends over. Obviously, Wednesdays are Wings Day. Lunch specials. For more information, go to HootersColorado.com. That's HootersColorado.com. We'll be right back with Kenneth Timmerman.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
What difference if I hail from north or south?
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. We would greatly appreciate that as well. It is Veterans Day. My friends, be sure and thank a veteran today for our freedom. And I think it's important to reflect on what an honor and privilege it is to live in the United States of America, the land of the free, home of the brave. I am thrilled to have on the line with me Kenneth Timmerman. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He wrote the book, The Election Heist, and he predicted this scheme to steal this election. He says the election is far from over, and manual recounts will expose the scheme. Kenneth Timmerman, we have had you on before, and this is playing out. I cannot believe what is happening. What do you think?
Well, it's quite extraordinary to see this. What we're in Antrim County, Michigan, and in Georgia, in a couple of counties, we're seeing precisely the scenario that I talk about in my book, The Election Heist, where there is an update or a patch to election software that changes the vote count. That is exactly what we have seen, and it's really extraordinary. I wrote this book to warn the Trump campaign. It came out in August. Of this kind of thing and how it would happen, exactly how they would introduce the patch. And it's happened exactly as I wrote in the book. And I now hear that the president is calling for manual recounts because that is the only way to catch this.
Now, my understanding is this that Dominion software that we're talking about, Kenneth?
It's Dominion Voting Systems, which is the kind of overall manufacturer. They incorporate software from a number of different companies, including one in the UK that is chaired by the former investment partner of George Soros, Mark Mullick Brown. He is also Mullick Brown is also currently a board member of the Soros Open Society Foundation. Now that is. Perhaps just a coincidence. It's perhaps also just a coincidence that Nancy Pelosi sent one of her staffers to that company a number of months before the election began to work there. So she now has a staffer working at that same company that produces the software that apparently had a, quote, glitch on election day and flipped votes from Donald Trump to Joe Biden. But again, this could all be just a remarkable coincidence, comrade.
My understanding also is that Dianne Feinstein's husband has investment interest in Dominion voting systems as well. Can you verify that?
Again, this is not in Dominion itself, but in one of the software subcontractors. And again, it's the software that drives those machines. The touchscreens themselves. Right. So he owns through various entities by himself, Blum Partners, and on and on. He's got six different entities. They each own 10%. So he owns around 60% of this company.
Okay. So explain to our listeners then what happened exactly. What is a patch for those of us that are not real techies? What happened?
So these most of your voting machines, the tabulators that actually scan the ballots, and also those touchscreen machines and the machines that generate a paper ballot, because we have many, many different types of voting machines in the United States. There are three major manufacturers and a couple of minor ones, but all of them are driven by software, and most of them incorporate what really amounts to a Dell computer, a desktop computer that is driven by Microsoft Office 7, which is probably the most hacked operating system in the history of software. And so every in the run-up to elections, the manufacturers have to send patches, their security patches, because the software has been hacked, or they are some kind of operating system software. And these patches must be calibrated and they must be certified weeks ahead of the election, and they must be done. So they must be tested in front of Republican and Democrat officials, people from both parties. That is the law in every state in the United States of America. So it is unheard of, as, by the way, the elections officials admitted in Georgia, unheard of to have a patch uploaded to the software the day of the election or the day before. You don't do that because you can't certify it.
So that happened. That happened in Michigan?
Yes, that happened. We know that happened in Georgia because they have acknowledged that expressly. And that, as I say, that is exactly the scenario in my book, The Election Heist. In Michigan, we've been told so far it was a software glitch that flipped the votes, 6,000 votes from Trump to Biden. And again, exactly as I explained in my book, it was an alert election supervisor who saw this. She said, oh, wait a second, this is a red county. Trump ought to be winning and he's losing. What's going on? And she started to do a manual recount in the precinct, and she saw that the numbers did not tally up to what they had electronically on election night. So then she began to pull those threads to see what was happening. And she did a full manual recount and discovered that 6,000 votes had been flipped, exactly 6,000 flipped from Trump to Biden. That is how they do it. They do it with a patch to the software that flips votes. I call it the secret switch in my book.
Okay, Kenneth Timmerman, I thought it was absolutely astounding this last Saturday morning when all the media called the race for Biden. I feel that they're trying to get out in front of everybody, or get out in front of this and dishearten Republicans, people that voted for Trump, and just go ahead and try to get this race called before all this comes out. Is that correct, or what do you think?
Look, I think any sentient being in the United States of America understands that the national media is complicit in this operation. They are the communications directorate of the Democrat National Committee, whether it's NBC, ABC, CNN, or now we're learning Fox News, unfortunately. That's why so many people are leaving Fox News for Newsmax, is because Fox News has bought into this. They bought into this whole charade of, quote, president-elect. Biden is president-elect of nothing, not even your local supermarket. You only become president-elect when your opponent concedes, as Hillary Clinton did in 2016, as Romney did in 2012, or when the states certify the election results, which is not going to happen for several weeks. And then the Electoral College meets on December 14th. So there is no such thing as president-elect selected by the media. It doesn't happen. It is a suppression operation. It is trying to the Soviets used to call this maskirovka. It is a very coordinated disinformation operation, gaslighting us through the reality of what's going on with these recounts on the ground to make us just give in.
And they were telegraphing this when Hillary Clinton and Pelosi, when they were talking about, oh, Trump won't leave the White House, he won't concede. They were already, they must have known that Trump had tremendous support. I had Richard Barris on several different times with Big Data Poll, and he said that these pollsters actually were doing voter suppression as well. They were so far off. So this looks like a big collusion to me. The manual recounts. Is that going to remedy the situation, Kenneth Timmerman?
The manual recounts will remedy the situation where there was a secret switch, where they flipped votes using the software, a software patch. Where the manual recounts are going to be problematic is in places like Detroit, Atlanta, and Philadelphia, where the Democrats realized that the secret switch wasn't enough, that they hadn't flipped enough votes electronically. And Trump was having extraordinary turnout among Black Americans, among Hispanic Americans. To them, the first warning sign was in Miami-Dade County, which he won 200,000 extra votes. And then the Democrats said, "We got to fix this." And they started to stuff the ballot boxes. They told Republican poll watchers at 2 a.m., "You can go home now. Everything's over. Our people are tired. We're going to bring them back at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock tomorrow morning and start the count at that point." And the Republicans came back at 8 or 9 in the morning, and lo and behold, in all of those big cities, there had been overnight 100,000, 200,000 votes just packed, stuffed into the ballot boxes. Nobody witnessed them. Nobody saw them being opened. Nobody verified that they came from legitimate voters. And that, by the way, is the subject of many, many of the president's lawsuits right now.
Okay, so should we do a revote in those areas where they had those ballot dumps?
Well, you know, that is a very good question. What is the remedy to this? And some of the president's lawyers have said we should separate out and disqualify the ballots. And the Sidney Powell has put out the numbers. There's 650,000 ballots in these key battleground states that are only voted for Joe Biden. There's no down ballot races. And it looks, you know, the appearance is that they were filled out hastily by poll workers in these big city areas without anybody watching, and then stuffed into the tabulator so you couldn't track them. That would be one remedy. That would flip Wisconsin. That would flip Pennsylvania. That would flip Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada for sure. Michigan is a little bit less certain, but nevertheless, that would be a remedy. Right? A revote, I think, has never been done in a presidential election. It has been done in local elections because of voter fraud, which I remind you, the Democrats tell us, does not exist.
Oh, my gosh. Kenneth Timmerman, really great information. Let's stay in touch. I would recommend people get your book, The Election Heist, and you are the New York Times bestselling author. You predicted this. And let's stay in touch as this plays out. And as you mentioned, Joe Biden is currently the president of nothing until we continue to go through this. So I so appreciate this conversation, Kenneth, and let's stay in touch.
Thanks so much, Kim. Me too. Thank you.
Okay. And get that book, The Election Heist. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. Is this not astounding what Kenneth just had to say?
It is. And, you know, I've been wondering, when the vote count was so close in 2016, why was Hillary Clinton not screaming for recounts and to check everything? And I believe it's because she knows that they would have discovered the cheating back then, and it would have shown Trump won by even more. So they didn't want to call in an airstrike on their own position. That's why they kept their mouth shut.
You know what, Jason? I think that that makes a lot of sense. And that would explain another reason why she was so angry.
Well, yeah, she was angry, and then they remember they had Jill Stein request a recount in Wisconsin or something hokey like that. What did Jill Stein care? She knew she hadn't won.
That is really fascinating. What did the markets do yesterday? They have been super wonky. There's the vaccine. It was up on the vaccine, but yet the breakup of the tech yesterday. What did the market do yesterday?
Well, yesterday it was a kind of a split market again, Kim. The Dow was up 260 points. Did close near the top end of its range yesterday. So, you know, it actually looked like a fairly positive day. However, NASDAQ kind of suffered again. It was down about 160. I didn't hear about a breakup of tech. I highly doubt that if it's a Biden administration, that tech is going to suffer much at all because, you know, they'd just be attacking their buddies.
Right. They did the bidding that we saw. It's astounding in this election. Big tech, big media, big pollsters, the education system. And still, Donald Trump got so many votes. I'm encouraged. I actually think that he will be our next president again. So, hey, Jason McBride, I know that there's things that people can do between now and the end of the year. People should go to our landing page together, airpresidential.com. That's AIRpresidential.com. Or people can reach you and your colleagues over at 303-694-1600. Every dollar that you can save in taxes is a dollar you have in your pocket. And I'd recommend that people do a discovery session between now and the end of the year, Jason.
I think that's a very, very good idea. Again, you've got the markets up very high with all this weirdness and uncertainty. Again, to me, it kind of feels like a gift from the gods, to be quite frank with you.
Okay, and Jason, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a great one, Kim.
We'll be right back.
Predovich and Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich and Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich and Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich and Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich and Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, KimMunson.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
This is my country, land of my birth.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That is KimMunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts, our most recent op-eds, and go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. It is Veterans Day today. It's been Veterans Day week all week here on The Kim Munson Show. And in the segments 3 and 4, we are bringing you amazing veterans and their stories. Today, Veterans Day, I am so honored to have on the line with me World War II veteran, Kim Kimble. Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I consider you a friend. We've gotten to know each other over the years through different interviews. And your story is a remarkable one, as each story is so unique and special. You served in the Navy. How did you end up choosing the Navy to serve in World War II, Kim Kimble?
Well, I guess I've always been partial to the military. My father was in France in World War I, and I always liked the Navy. And from the time I can remember seeing my first picture of a battleship, I wanted to serve in it.
And you grew up in Oklahoma. Do I remember that correctly?
I did. I was raised in a little town called Davenport, Oklahoma, about halfway between Tulsa and Oklahoma City.
And when you decided to join the Navy, you were just a young kid. How old were you?
I was just barely 17, and I had to get my father's permission to join. The school superintendent said at that time that anyone who wanted to go into the service in their senior year wouldn't have to go to high school for the senior year, and he would ensure that we got diplomas. So I got my father to sign me in. My mother wasn't too happy about it.
You think?
But I went in about a month after I was turned 17.
I think that's remarkable for people to understand just how young you were. What year was that, Kim Kimble?
1944.
Okay. And you joined the Navy. You're just 17 years old. Where do you go for basic training?
We went to boot camp in San Diego. Unfortunately, they have closed that now, and they only have one boot camp. I think it's located in Illinois. But that was a beautiful, beautiful base, an old Navy base. And I personally enjoyed it. A lot of boys didn't like it and really hated boot camp. But I got a lot out of it and learned a lot.
I had read a story, Kim Kimble, regarding some of these kids from farming communities that ended up in the military boot camp in World War II, and they wrote back and said, we get up at 5, you know, breakfast at this time, we do calisthenics, we train all day. It's like a vacation.
that's pretty close to being it, but everything was so new, and when you're 17 and you see the ocean for the first time and ride on a train overnight for the first time, and I remember after boot camp, I was given the opportunity to try out for the Navy band. They had a band, a full-time band, that played for the troops to march to. And I tried out and made it and played in the band then for another 2 months after completing training. And I remember so well, the march we played most often was called Colonel Bogey. And sometimes we'd play for 8 hours a day. My lips looked like two pieces of liver. I played the baritone.
Wow. And now women pay good money for Botox for their lips to look like that, Kim Kimble.
All they got to do is get a baritone and play it for it.
For 8 hours. Okay, boot camp. You've played in the Navy band. What happens after that to you, Kim Kimble?
Got assigned to a radar operator school at Point Loma and spent a couple of months there learning the basics of radar. And then I was reassigned to the USS Hornet as one of their radar gang. We had 81 people in the radar gang on board. And I spent my World War II career as a radarman. And when I got out, I got a commission in college, and then got recalled in the Korean War for another 2.5 years.
Radar was pretty new at that time, wasn't it, Kim Kimble?
It was very new. We had, it was completely crude compared to what they have today, but we had the first altitude determining radar, which would allow us to pick up aircraft over 400 miles out and determine at what altitude they were flying, which was important when you vectored out fighters to intercept the enemy. They really had an advantage if they knew what level they were flying. And it was so big, I remember it took 3 operators to run it. It was a huge thing, about 12 foot long and 8 foot high, and I don't know how deep.
And was this was on the aircraft carrier. So let's go back. The USS Hornet was an aircraft carrier. And this was the second USS Hornet. So tell us that story.
Well, the first, as I mentioned, was sunk in one of the battles. And the second was to be named the Kearsarge. It was already almost completed. So when the first one was sunk, they renamed the second the USS Hornet instead of Kearsarge. And she made most of the major battles in the war. She received the Presidential Unit Citation, was present at about every major battle except, I think, the Battle of Midway and maybe one other. She sank over 12 or or shot down over 1,200 enemy aircraft, and I've forgotten how many ships. But her Air Force was very, very successful, and it consisted usually of about 100 planes on board, and the crew was somewhere around 3,500, including the air group and the people that ran the ship.
Kim Kimble, was it somewhat thrilling to watch these fighters take off from the USS Hornet and then also land? Again, this was pretty new stuff.
Yeah, it was. The Hornet was a state-of-the-art carrier at that time. It compared to the size of today's carriers, it was a rowboat because they have upwards of 6,000 people, and we only had about 3,500. But it was thrilling. We didn't have any jets. They were all prop-driven planes, some very famous ones, the SP-2C dive bomber and the F-8F Grumman fighter, and also the F-4U, which I think is the prettiest fighter ever made, the gull-wing fighter. And the CIC, which is called the Combat Information Center, where the radar is located, and that's the area that they accumulate all the information, all the battle information, all the G2, and everything is put together, and it advises the skipper or the admiral, if he's on board in charge of the fleet, of what's going on, and then he can hopefully make the right decisions. But the CIC was located in the island, which is that part that sticks up on the side of the ship. We were on the third deck up. We had a really good view. You could step out on the catwalk and see the whole flight deck and watch operations from there, watch them bring in planes for landing, and also watch the takeoffs. And I did that many times. I saw a lot of accidents, a lot of planes that didn't quite make it, but not too many lives lost. It was remarkable, considering when you're landing and you're up 1,000 feet and behind the carrier, it looks like about the size of an airmail postage stamp.
Oh, I'm sure. And I can't remember if it was our conversation or I had a conversation with someone that said that it took a little while for them to figure out that do not park the planes at the end of the runway on the aircraft carrier, park them off to the side, because there were many times when the planes overshot when they were coming in, and it was important to make that change. Now looking back, you go, oh, that makes a lot of sense, but a lot of this stuff is trial by error.
Well, yeah, what we ended up with were two catapults on the front. They were hydraulically operated, and they would catapult the aircraft off. On landing, we had a straight flight deck, and when they landed, they would park the land plane at the very front of the ship until they could use an elevator to take it below to the hangar deck. But if a landing plane failed to catch the hook on the cable as he was coming in, he ran the risk of running into those parked planes ahead, and that could be catastrophic. So they put three barriers that were raised and lowered hydraulically when planes landed, and these were about 4 foot high, and they consisted of 4 1-inch steel cables. And if a plane missed its hook when landing, it would crash into the barrier, which pretty well destroyed the propeller and sometimes the plane, but at least it kept them from running into the ones on the front. Later on, the Hornet was modified, and the design today is called a canted flight deck, which the landing is to an angle to the side. So if the plane misses the hook, it just keeps on going and flies around again for a second attempt.
And you did see, I mean, it probably happened, I don't know, often? Did guys miss their mark? Did they, if they missed that cable, did they go up and circle back around, or what happened normally?
No, normally if they missed the cable with their tail hook, they'd hit the barrier, and that would just like ensnarl them in a net. And the protocol now is, with a canted flight deck, when they land, as soon as their wheels hit, they push the throttle all the way forward So if a tail hook doesn't catch, they can immediately take off and fly around again. They could not do that with a straight deck carrier because you would probably hit the planes that were parked in front of you. So we didn't have a whole lot of we had pretty good pilots. They were well trained, and that's one of the reasons we won the war. We had the best aircraft and by far the best trained pilots. But when we did, I remember after the war was over, we got our first group of eight F fighters aboard, which were a very, very powerful Grumman fighter. They didn't see any action because the design was too late. But they were so hard to land. We were landing the first squadron to land on a carrier off of San Francisco. And there were 12 in the squadron, and eight of them went into the barriers on their first landing attempt. So we destroyed a lot of planes that day, but they had to make some modifications because they were just too hot to land.
Wow, that is fascinating. Hey, Kim Kimble, we're going to go to break. This is Kim Munson with the Kim Munson Show. I'm talking with World War II veteran Kim Kimble. He served in the Navy on the aircraft carrier, the USS Hornet. Before we go to break, though, I want to give a shout-out to one of my great partners, and that is Castlegate Knife and Tool, family-owned business located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. And here we are coming into the holidays for your Christmas shopping for that difficult person on your guest list. Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place to go. They have all kinds of different knives, and a knife is a great addition to the All-American Toolkit. Whether or not you're a sportsman, military personnel, collector, some new kitchen knives, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place to do your Christmas shopping. More information, go to castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We will be right back with World War II veteran Kim Kimble.
Metropolitan Total Property is more than landscaping. Locally owned and operated since 1987, their team is proud to be your neighbor and live in the community. Metropolitan Total Property stands behind their work, and your complete satisfaction is their top priority. Kim Munson highly recommends Metropolitan Total Property for landscaping and more. She was one of their very first clients way back in 1987. Be sure to check out MetropolitanTotalProperty.com for their complete menu of services. Again, that's MetropolitanTotalProperty.com.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
I pledge thee my allegiance, America the bold.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent podcasts and our most recent op-eds. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. We would appreciate that as well. On the line with me is Kim Kimble. It is Veterans Day, and each day this week in our segments 3 and 4, we're focusing on a veteran and their story. Kim Kimble's is a remarkable story. He was just a few weeks into his 17th year when he talked his father into signing and letting him, he joined the Navy during World War II. His mother wasn't that happy about it. I can surely understand that. And he served on the aircraft carrier, the USS Hornet, and he was a radar man. Kim Kimble, we were talking during break that, and we've had several different conversations, that you remember the more humorous things and try to put the other things aside. And I think that that's important for perspective, yes?
Yeah, it is. I do try to remember that. I know one of the things that I think is kind of remarkable was the Hornet participated in the battle of liberating Guam, and that was a pretty heavy-duty battle. and there were almost, I guess, 14,000 Japanese troops that were killed or either committed suicide by jumping off cliffs near the harbor there in Guam. And when the Hornet pulled into Guam after the battle, when it was secured, there were 10,000 to 12,000 Japanese that had been laying there for several days in the sun, dead, and that wasn't a pretty sight, or it wasn't very good to smell with either. And they took bulldozers and just bulldozed them into a common grave. And one of the things I remember, years later, this was maybe 15 years ago, I went back to Guam. I'm an engineer, and I put on a training course on flow meters for the Navy and the Guam Power Authority. And I was on the base, and I went into the officer's club for a beer and got talking with the bartender. And I had noticed that the area where they buried the Japanese, it was now a golf course. And I asked him, I said, this sounds a little sacrilegious to me that you guys turned that into a golf course after it became a grave for over 10,000 Japanese. And he laughed and he said, well, he said, about 10 years ago, a bunch of Japanese showed up and dug them all up and hauled them back to Japan. So we made it into a golf course.
Wow. That's remarkable. That is absolutely remarkable. Another story on the first USS Hornet was that is the aircraft carrier that Jimmy Doolittle did. They did their amazing mission on that. And that's a remarkable story also. And a lot of young people don't know about that. But that was actually taking bombers off of an aircraft carrier. This was early in the war. Tell us a little bit about that, Kim Kimble.
Well, they took B-25. The raid was conceived by Doolittle, and it was several months after Pearl Harbor, and we were looking for a way to hit back fast at Japan. And it was a very high-risk raid because they'd never flown a B-25 bomber off a carrier. And they weren't sure that it would really happen, and they had no way to test it before. So he loaded up, I think it was 25 or 20 B-25 bombers. I've forgotten how many. And they could not use the catapults because the planes weren't reinforced to take a catapult stress. So they had to fly off under their own power, and they revved up the ship's engines to maximum flank speed into the wind to get as much wind as possible over the deck. And they managed to get all of them off without one single failure. It was really, really remarkable. And it was a one-way trip. They flew to Japan, but they didn't have enough gas to get back to the carrier, and they probably couldn't have landed if they had. So they were to fly on over Japan into China. And some of them made it, some of them didn't make it, but it sure shook the Japanese up because that's the first time we were able to inflict damage on Japan itself. And it was a big morale booster to this country.
Well, and I've seen pictures of these bombers taking off from the USS Hornet, and obviously they had to be totally loaded with fuel so that they could make the run to get to Japan. And as you mentioned, it was a real morale booster for the Americans that shortly after the bombing of Pearl Harbor that we were able to deliver a blow to the Japanese. But I saw those bombers come off, and they dipped down, and it was really a gutsy thing for these pilots to do this.
It was indeed. In fact, they carried extra fuel tanks. It took all they loaded it with bombs, and then all the other armament, the machine guns and the other armor that the plane had were taken off to save weight. So all they really had was a load of fuel, a load of bombs, and a lot of faith in God.
I actually have interviewed Jimmy Doolittle's granddaughter, and she said that they really went at this very scientifically. They, as dangerous as this was, they had really looked at how they could make it work, and it is an amazing story that all of those bombers made it off of the USS Hornet and made it to their destination over Japan, and then sadly not all of them survived that mission, though.
That's right. In fact, that was before the day of computers, so all the calculations as to whether they could fly off or not had to be done by hand, and it took them weeks just to prove on paper that it was possible.
I do think we're doing our kids a disservice by not teaching a lot of those basic things. I actually got to ride in a B-25 last summer, and for some reason I thought it would be like the size of a passenger jet that I've ridden on before. There's not a lot of room in that. Those guys on there, and it was a very, I can't remember now how many guys there were on there, but there was pilot, co-pilot, navigator. Of course, they didn't have the armaments on there, so they didn't have any gunners, right?
No, they didn't. I think they had four in the crew, a navigator, a pilot and co-pilot, and a bombardier. But, they're pretty cramped. They're noisy as all get out. And if it's hot weather, they're hotter than hell. If it's cold weather, you'll freeze.
That's true. Okay, Kim Kimble, you have some remarkable stories. One of them that I want to make sure that we have time to tell is after the war was over and bringing our soldiers back to the United States, the USS Hornet was retrofitted to do that. Tell us about that, Kim Kimble.
Well, the Hornet, at the end of the war, went through the Typhoon fleet that the Third Fleet was caught in and suffered a lot of damage to the ship and had to come back to the States and was in San Francisco on VJ Day when Japan surrendered. And, in fact, I was selected to do shore patrol on that day in San Francisco, and they told us, don't bother anybody unless it's rape or murder, because the celebration was really big. But we spent then the next several weeks unloading supplies we had put on there for the Japanese push. We were to be one of the lead bombers in Japan. And there's a story, it's kind of interesting, that they loaded 400 or 500 live foxes on board the ship about a week before VJ Day. They had a space all reserved for them. And the crew that was on duty at the time was sworn to secrecy. And I didn't find out until 15 years afterwards that it was to be part of the psychological warfare, because there's apparently an old Japanese adage that says if you see an luminous fox jumping across the countryside, it's a sure sign of disaster. And our air group, I guess, was supposed to go in after the foxes were painted with luminous paint and parachute them all over Japan. So that was kind of interesting. It never happened. They offloaded the foxes as soon as the war was over and turned us into a magic carpet fleet, which was a troop transport, by welding 8,000 bunks on the hangar deck, cutting the crew down to a skeleton crew so we could bring home upwards of 10,000 troops at a time. And we made four trips to and from the Far East. One of them, I remember, when we went out, it was really boring because it was a week's trip to get out there and there was just a skeleton crew and nothing to do. And the morale was not good, especially when we had to leave on December 24th for one trip. And the bridge where the ship is conned from has an officer deck. They also have a telephone talker that talks to CIC, where I work. And one night on the way out, the officer deck got a call that just said, the Panam Cooper strikes. And it was a telephone call from someplace in the ship. And he had a little conversation with him. Finally, the Phantom Pooper said, I struck right outside the captain's cabin. And they sent a Marine down. And there was a little bag of fecal material sitting with the captain's door. And that got all over the ship within hours. I mean, everybody would say, who was the Phantom Pooper? And I'm using a colloquialism here, not to what we really said. But The next day, everybody was talking about it, and the next night he got another call. Phantom Hooper strikes again right outside the gun locker on third deck. And sure enough, they found another little sack. That went on for about a week or more, and it was the talk of the ship, and it really improved morale. They were making bets on where he was going to strike the next night. And I don't know, they never did find him, but I was in port. I was a Jeep driver, and I drove the captain around sometimes. We had five Jeeps on board. And I was talking to him one time, bringing him back from an air base, and I said, do you think they'll ever catch the Phantom Hooper? And he looked and smiled, and he said, no, I don't think they ever will. And I think he might have put that together himself just in an attempt to improve ship's morale, because it sure did.
That is such a funny story. Leadership, sometimes you just never know where it's going to arrive. And you were bringing back our soldiers, 8,000 of them at a time, bringing them back from the Pacific after the war. And it was an amazing thing. I remember one other thing. You said that you guys got three square meals a day, but those soldiers only got two meals a day just because there were so many of them and you're trying to get them back. Am I remembering that correctly, Kim Kimble?
Yeah, they were... The bus were about, as I remember, eight high. And the four guys didn't have anything to do but sit around and play poker. They were given two meals a day. And we, as a ship's crew running the ship, got three meals, of course. And sometimes we'd give away a meal if we didn't want it. The guy was particularly hungry. But they had to take saltwater showers. There was not enough fresh water for all that many men, so they'd rig up saltwater showers. But in all those four trips, I never heard one single complaint. Those four guys were so glad to be going home.
Oh, Kim Kimble, we are out of time right now, but my friends, we stand on the shoulders of giants. You've just heard the story from one of them, from Kim Kimble, World War II veteran. Kim Kimble, thank you so much for joining us on this Veterans Day.
Thanks. It was a pleasure to be here.
You have a great day.
You too.
My friends, our quote for today is from Admiral Chester W. Nimitz, and he said, leadership consists of picking good men and helping them do their best. My friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, God bless our veterans, and God bless America.
And I don't want to cry, but tell them if I don't